Chapter 8. Reflection. Trial by Doppelganger.
Resourceful, these ones, said Ovisa to himself, his data wand skimming over the sea of information that poured across the myriad screens of his analysis cradle. Resourceful and lucky. He mentally chided himself at the very idea. Although that is a barbaric notion, unbecoming of the Earth caste, he muttered. The test subjects had shown an incredible degree of aptitude.
No doubt it was the legacy of their maker's stringent genetics program, complemented by a comprehensive training regime. Luck had nothing to do with it.
Remain calm, Ovisa whispered. Remain rational. Superstition is the enemy of the Tauva.
In truth, an unfamiliar emotion was coursing through his mind, hot and uncomfortable. The feeling was frightening and strangely empowering at the same time. The intruders had overcome not one, but two of his most prized prototypes, and badly damaged the holographic suite of the Pech Hostile Environment program in the process. Nothing that could not be fixed, and the rich harvest of data he had gleaned would more than make up for their loss. Also, he reminded himself, no Tau lives had been lost. Even Helper Oblatai's program could be recovered from the compromised KV-120 prototype. All in all, his initiative had proven a worthy sacrifice and a noble furtherance of the greater good. So why did he feel like smashing his fist into the screen?
They seek to escape, Ovisa muttered to himself, right into the arms of their brethren. Escape. Oh, yes.
His lips turned upwards in a thin smile as a suite of 20 identical data signs spiked under his wand.
But perhaps not the kind they would hope for.
Sicarius' shoulder charged Numitor hard, smashing him aside and taking the killing bolt on his pauldron instead. It was not the first time he had taken a hit from a bolt shell, but its detonation still hurt like hell. He turned with the impact and pivoted in a sweeping circle, his Tempest Blade lashing out to take the barrel from the Space Marine's bolter before he could fire another shot.
We're on the same side, damn you, shouted Numitor as he scrabbled upwards from the sand.
Shock and protest mingled in his voice. 9 more unidentified ultramarines were converging on their positions, bolters raised to the shoulder. Sicarius readied his blade. That was the gun stance of Tau Line infantry, not that of the Adeptus Astartes. These were not allies. This was not a case of mistaken identity. This was the twisted science of the Tau writ large. Sicarius read the battlefield at a glance. In the middle distance, the silhouettes of incoming assault marines were getting closer, gaining on the much closer tactical marines. They were hurtling over a wasteland of crushed amber and verdigrised brass, vaulting bombed-out ruins that jutted at odd angles. Sicarius remembered the crunch of that shattered amber underfoot, the memory fresh from when he had crossed swords with the Tau for the first time. The war zone was a perfect replica of Vespertine's suburban desolation. Now, however, it was his own brethren he would fight. Sicarius noted with satisfaction that Numitor was still hesitant. So be it. He would lead instead. Lead as he was born to do. The sergeant stepped in close to the Space Marine he had just disarmed, even as the warrior reached for bolt pistol and grenade. He could hear the pin slide from the grenade's collar with a tiny chink. The air filled with the din of thudding gunfire as the Space Marines ahead opened fire, but Sicarius was already under the disarmed warrior's guard. By dropping low and putting his shoulder under his foe's breastplate, he lifted him bodily from his feet, cutting the hand that clutched the grenade from his wrist with a quick lateral slash of his sword. He felt his improvised shield shudder hard as a bolt volley took its toll, gouging great holes in the Space Marine's power pack and dense flesh alike. As the disembodied hand clutching the live grenade dropped towards the dust, Sicarius punted it hard with the toe of his armored boot. It hurtled into the tight ranks of the bolter-armed Space Marines ahead before detonating right on cue, punching 5 of them from their feet in a storm of frag shrapnel. It was all the chance the Ultramarines needed. Diving through the aperture that Notoros had made in the wall, Squad Sicarius fanned out and mounted a massed charge. Covering fire came from those members of Squad Antellion still beyond the impromptu portal, bolter muzzles flashing in the gloom. Their aim was true. Three more of the oncoming Space Marine gunline took bolter rounds to the head and neck, pitching them into the dust. Those still standing opened fire. A bolt winged Sicarius in the thigh, sending a burst of vivid pain through the old war wound in his knee. He channeled the pain into a roar of anger, hefting the dying Space Marine he was using as a shield as he charged. The enemy assault squad was bounding in close now, their movements uncannily synchronized. Sicarius felt raw hatred at the sight. It was a parody of ultramarine battle doctrine, paper-thin and devoid of any true tactical awareness.
"Robot Sergeant!"
shouted Glavius, a note of confusion in his voice.
"Simulacra!" bellowed Sicarius. "Lethal force! No mercy!"
The false assault squad opened fire with bolt pistols as they flew in, chainswords revving. Four of the Space Marines Sicarius had taken down with the frag grenade had assumed gun crouches now, their bolters still held in rifleman positions.
"Jump!"
shouted Ketoros, just before the enemy squad opened fire in unison. Glavius and Velitan vaulted high over the low volley, the servos in their power armor boosting their formidable strength. They cleared 5 feet, even with their jump packs holding nothing but fumes, landing with a crunch to charge on without breaking stride. Swiftly, Ketoros closed in from the flank, flamer gouting a long tongue of promethium that caught the four closest Space Marines in its fiery embrace. The volatile, sticky fuel clung to their power armor as it burned with the ferocity of an industrial furnace. Three went down, swathed in rippling waves of violet flame. Ketoros grunted in satisfaction before pulling a crack grenade and hurling it backhand towards the fourth. The Space Marine turned, bolter outstretched, only for the crack grenade to detonate upon him, ripping half his torso away and sending him toppling backward. Gouting black fluid and greenish-yellow lubricant poured from the crackling cavity of his chest. Then the rest of Squad Sicarius joined the fight. Velitan kicked aside the bolter that was swinging towards him, knocking it wide, and stepping in to place the muzzle of his bolt pistol under the helm of his adversary. He fired a bolt straight up, blasting apart his foe's head from the inside in a storm of ceramite and bone. To Sicarius's right, Genturis cleaved low with his paired chainswords, taking the legs from two of the false ultramarines. Stepping forward, he reversed his grips and knelt to drive the gnawing, blunt points of his blades downwards, one through each of the fallen warrior's gorget seals. Throats and spines were torn apart in a double spray of black blood. Nearby, Kolnid barged another to the ground before putting one bolt pistol shell into the gut and one through the eye socket.
"An insult to the Primarchs," he said.
"Look up,"
ordered Sicarius.
"You have incoming."
A roar from above, and a pair of the fake Space Marines smashed Kolnid from his feet, their own chain blades screaming a high-pitched whine that put Sicarius's teeth on edge. Another two landed close by with a crunching thud, bolt pistols booming. Kolnid was sent skidding through the dust as the explosions tore into him. Sicarius saw a spray of crimson jet out as the second explosive bolt found its mark, tearing his squadmate's leg from his hip in a welter of blood. Kolnid did not cry out, but instead took a shot with his own bolt pistol that slammed into the side of the closest Space Marine and sent him spinning away. From Sicarius's left came Magros, his battle cry mingling with the throaty roar of his inherited eviscerator. The great blade came round hard, chewing right through one of the fake assault marines to send the gory halves of his body tumbling to the sand. Magros kept swinging, the blade juddering into the spine of the next Space Marine. There was a metallic screech as the eviscerator caught hard in the ceramite armor of the warrior's flank. Magros was yanked forward, but kept his grip, shoulder barging his adversary with such force he knocked him over before freeing the protesting blade. Numitor heard a loud snap as Magros stamped on his foe's helm, sparks crackling from a gorget bent at an unnatural angle. Two more false ultramarines slammed down, intent on the kill. Hurling aside his bolt-chewed corpse shield, Sicarius span around to bat the barrel of his plasma pistol into the flat of the nearest foe's chainsword, forcing it out wide. The Space Marine pushed back hard on reflex, his strength impressive, but he only succeeded in putting the plasma pistol's barrel in line with his helm. Sicarius laughed harshly as he pulled the trigger of the ancient weapon, taking his foe's head from his neck. Spatters of molten flesh and metal sizzled across the sergeant's armor with a pleasing hiss. Sergeant Sicarius felt a crushing impact as a red-helmed sergeant veered from the sky to slam into his flank. Together, they barreled into the confusion of corpses littering the sands. The flash of a bolt nearby blinded Sicarius for a second, and the enemy sergeant brought his boot down onto the Tempest Blade, pinning it flat. Sicarius brought his plasma pistol round instead and pulled the trigger. It was still recharging from its last shot and yielding nothing but an annoyed buzz. His adversary's chainblade revved loud as it came down hard towards his unprotected face. To die sprawling upon the blade of an impostor puppet would be a grave ignominy. There was a flash of azure, and Numitor's power fist slammed into the enemy sergeant with such force it all but ripped him in two. The blow sent him sideways with a mauled flank and a broken spine. Sicarius's vision filled with red light as Ketoros knocked the last of the enemy assault marines from the sky with a spear of ignited promethium. The stink of the volatile chemical seemed almost pleasant. Numitor stepped past Sicarius to shoot the enemy sergeant's chainsword from his hand in a puff of dark fluids, kicking the bolt pistol from his adversary's grip. Rising, Sicarius severed the warrior's arms with artful flicks of his Tempest Blade. All around the two sergeants was the high whine of Squad Sicarius's chainswords, chewing through ceramite, and the grisling growl of those that had made it through to the flesh and bone beneath. In seconds, the battle was over.
"He's all yours, if you want him," said Numitor, backhanding the enemy sergeant into the sand and sending his helm spinning free. "Just kill the blasted thing," said Sicarius. "And it's not a he, it's a facsimile, a test servitor. It's not worthy of my blade."
Numitor grinned.
"The blade that was under its boot a moment ago." "Still, as you wish," he said.
A chopping motion ended whatever poor excuse for a life the simulacrum had called its own. Sicarius got to his feet, taking care not to put too much weight on his knee. Glancing down at the mockery of a space marine in the dirt below him, Sicarius felt a sickness in his soul. The face that stared back, glassy-eyed and dense, was a lacerated slab of flesh, as dull and devoid of wit as a dead ogryn. Something in its jaw, in its broad forehead, was far too close to the face he saw in the mirror after his meditations. He shot Numitor a dark look.
"These Tau must die," he said coldly. "All of them."
"If this is what the Tau believe the Emperor's finest to be," said Glavius, "it's no wonder we're making gains across the planet."
"Making gains?" said Numitor. "How do you know that?"
"We're space marines," he said,
his expression one of mild effrontery.
"The angels of death. You should take pride in that, Numitor. Let it inform your philosophy."
Numitor cast a wary glance back at the ragged hole of burned plastic that had led back to the mock jungle. Ionzian stood on guard, the big man as unflinching as a servitor, but he still half expected the sound of Tau missiles to fill the air at any moment. He turned back to Glavius, shoulders straight.
"The fact I don't let complacency interfere with my awareness is a large part of why I am Sergeant, Brother Glavius, and you are not. And yet, your squad now numbers only 4 to our 7. "Have a care with your tone, Glavius," said Numitor. "It's more like 6.5 anyway."
Nearby, Colnid was cauterizing the ragged stump that had once been his leg with the hissing barrel of Dualor's plasma pistol.
"I heard that, Sergeant," he said through gritted teeth. "Where's Apothecary Dracos when you need him? I'm making a real mess of this." "It'll heal," said Sicarius. "Just get on with it."
Denturis had laid aside his weapons to saw a lower leg from one of the fallen space marines with his combat knife. Chainswords were incredibly destructive weapons, designed to chew through flesh and bone in the blink of an eye. They were devised to mutilate and butcher, and made poor surgeon's tools, even in the hands of a skilled bladesman.
Colnid,
said Denturis, wiping the worst of the black gunk from the salvaged leg's knee joint and offering it to his squadmate.
It's the right shape, at least. Maybe bind it on? It might take some of the weight.
Colnid smiled up at his battle brother's optimism.
Thank you, Denturis. I'll splint it on, and use this as a walking stick if I have to, he said, motioning to his chainsword. Better the cane than the crutch, remember? If it's good enough for old Uncle Rhytricus. Then it's a rare thing indeed, finished Denturis with a chuckle.
He offered Colnid a hand up, pulling his brother upright.
Airborne, the leg won't matter so much, he continued, though the landing is going to hurt. But we can't get airborne, said Ionzian, stern and statue-like as he stood on guard, eyes fixed on the horizon. We couldn't fill an altar chalice with our fuel reserves, even if we pooled everything we have left. Don't be so sure, said Ketoros.
He was prizing armor plates from the jump packs of the facsimile assault marines, laying them around himself in a neat circle. Velatan was examining each in turn, hurling some away, but leaving the rest in place. Ketoros dipped a blackened finger into a jump pack's fuel reservoir and took it back out, sniffing the droplet of liquid that clung to his finger, and even putting a tiny amount on his tongue. His face, already taut and disfigured, twisted further.
Prometheum! Or close enough. Tastes a little cleaner, in fact. We cannot use the war gear of the enemy, protested Magros. It's heresy. Out of the question. In all my 28 years as an ultramarine, I've never... Yes, yes, said Sicarius. Laudable xenophobia, Magros. And quite correct. We will not be using tainted alien technology as a substitute for the war gear blessed by our own tech marines.
There was an awkward silence. Many of the ultramarines were running on fumes, their battle plates severely compromised, and their ammunition stores all but dry after the intensity of the invasion thus far. Golotan and Ketoros were especially in dire need of resupply. The former had taken a pulse bomb explosion to the chest, his plate shot through with a tracery of cracks that would betray him at the first true impact, whilst the latter was scorched to the point that most of his armor's outer layer had charred away.
Actually, said Velatan, I'm running some tests, and, well, it appears that this is Imperial war gear, specifically the battle plate of the 3rd and 6th companies. It's been tampered with, but it's still functional.
Better than functional. Much of it is in prime condition.
3rd and 6th, said Numitor. We fought alongside them on Vespertine, on the other side of the Damocles Gulf. Could the Tau have stripped those we left behind in order to make their simulations as realistic as possible?
Theoretically, said Velatan. Likely, in fact. In an active war zone, our apothecaries would have recovered the fallen's progenoid glands and little else. There's every reason why the Tau would seek to understand and even replicate Imperial war materiel.
Disgusting, said Magros. To defile our sacred war gear, using it to armor some vat-grown approximation of an Adeptus Astartes, that's bad enough. But then to set them against us, it beggars belief.
From a certain scientific point of view, said Velatan, it makes a lot of sense.
Know thine enemy.
Magros strode up to Velatan and grabbed him by the gorget, yanking him from his feet.
I cannot believe you said that, Velatan, he said. You, who claim to understand the Codex inside and out, explain to me how defiling the dead makes a lot of sense.
Velatan broke Magros's grip with a quick shrug of his forearms.
You are a slave to sentiment as ever, he said, his tone flat. The Codex is based on logic, not emotion. Maybe you can train with the scouts for another 28 years, if they'll let you back in.
Magros bared his teeth in a grimace at Velatan's self-righteous tone. Numitor stepped forward and interceded, placing his powered gauntlet on the warrior's pauldron with a loud clang.
Come on, brothers, he said. You are both right. We resupply here. We claim that which is the chapter's property. Better we use this war gear than carry it, further harming our cause, or leave it here for Xenos drones to pick over. We need the fuel, Magros, added Denturis. Those with the wit to adapt soon take wing, continued Velatan, as the Codex teaches us. Numitor detached his own damaged pauldron and salvaged an intact equivalent, magclamps thunking as he broke it free from the rest of his battle plate.
Ketoros, spare Magros the last of your flamer fuel if you think you can repurpose the Promethean analogue. I could use a full tank and a field repair, and I'm not the only one. Golatan is about to fall apart entirely.
Golatan cocked his head but said nothing, wise enough to know that Numitor's change of subject was intended to defuse a dangerous situation.
Once we have completed our killstrike and returned to the heart of the operation, continued Numitor, we'll ensure the battle plate we take, the Promethean we siphon, and even the bolt rounds left in our magazines are fully blessed and reconsecrated. Until then, Brother Magros, we do what we were born to do, survive and wage war. In the name of Macragg and the Emperor!
Magros stood silent for a moment before looking away and walking over to join Ionzion on watch. The rest of the Eighth began to quickly and efficiently strip away battleplate and siphon fuel from the jump packs of their simulacrum assailants. Within a few minutes, both squads were refueled, their armor mismatched, but whole once more, and their ammunition supplies full twice over. Numitor noticed that Ketoros had not replaced a single plate of his scorched black ceramite. The flamer specialist was standing with arms crossed, scowling at his battle brothers as they went about their work. Numitor caught Sicarius's eye, making the question mark gesture of Talasarian secant. Sicarius gave a curt nod and strode over to Ketoros.
Well?
Asked Sicarius as the others completed their resupply one by one.
I'll not join the corpse harvest if it's all the same, came the reply. I prefer to wear my scars with pride.
Swiftly, the ultramarine turned to meet Sicarius's gaze. There was a fire in his eyes that took even Numitor aback for a moment.
They help me remember, said Ketoros darkly.
Sicarius, Numitor, and Antelion jogged at pace across the dunes of the fake Vespertine, their squads in close formation behind them. They moved with fluid grace despite their size, for the machine spirits of their war gear had been appeased. Shattered battleplate had been stripped away and replaced, fuel cells replenished, and weapons reloaded. Even Sicarius had found a spoiled plasma cartridge that he had managed to coax back into life as a replacement for his near-spent original. Galvanized by their success, the Ultramarines were making good speed. Guns twitched upward at every new shadow on the horizon. Sicarius was too stubborn to replace his helm, but Numitor, now constantly listening for the whoosh of incoming missiles, had donned his, the better to keep a vigil. He watched his visor's readouts for the slightest ghost of an electronic signature. After the close encounter with the doppelganger space marines, he was not feeling quite as invulnerable as usual. A quick exchange between the sergeants had determined their best chance of making progress was to keep moving. With enemy weapons scientists sending ever larger and deadlier warsuits their way, they had no real choice. They were trusting in Velatan's Auspex to keep them on course as they hustled from ruin to ruin. Before the hour was out, Numitor's visor started portraying anomalies at the edge of its scrying range. The readings up ahead fuzzed, crackling and shorting out whenever he looked directly into the distance.
Velatan, are you getting this?
Yes, Sergeant Numitor, replied the logistician. Auspex anomalies, very much like those I detected in the jungle. It could be the perimeter of this testing zone, or simply interference from the electronic countermeasures of the stealth warsuit.
It's the perimeter, said Sicarius.
He shot Numitor a black look before raising his plasma pistol and letting fly a shot, a sphere of incandescent light hurtling into the distance before detonating with a crack against nothing at all. The impact left a scorch mark hanging in the air, holographic projections shorting around its periphery where the electromagnetic charge of the plasma had burned out circuitry.
See? Antellion, get Notoros up here and take out the perimeter wall. The sooner we're free of this place, the better. We should be back in the war effort proper by now, not skulking around like rats in some Xenos laboratory.
Antellion motioned his melter gunner forward, and Notoros aimed his weapon at the weakness in the wall that Sicarius had made with his plasma pistol. The Meltagon hissed as it sent a column of superheated air to burn a hole through the hyperdense plastic of the periphery wall. The stink of burning polymers and bubbling circuitry filling the air once more. A thick shaft of light streamed through. Numitor stepped forwards into the unknown, photo lenses dimming to dark crimson. A vast swathe of wasteland stretched out around Gelbrin City. It was majestic, thought Numitor, for an alien world at least. The edge of the Earthcast complex was a sloping lip running around the circumference of the testing facility. Beyond it was a sharp cliff of ivory plummeting down to a sea of indigo wilderness. The middle distance was dotted with sparkling lakes and the swells of small mountains. On the horizon was a vast, snow-capped peak with a series of sheer faces that looked all but impossible to climb, even for a space marine. Perhaps their quarry would flee there, thought the sergeant, and give him a chance to find out. Numitor shook his head. No doubt they would find the Xenos commander they sought languishing in a med bay rather than ready for war in his crimson warsuit, and the glorious duel he hoped for would be disappointingly brief. Right now, however, he would settle for a victory of any kind. The sting of failure, of the loss of his brethren, still lingered. This was not the Ultramarines' way of war. The Eighths were far from the teachings of the Codex Astartes, and getting further away with every passing hour. At maximum zoom, he could see the target they were heading for, a cluster of tall hexagonal buildings, the vague heat-haze shimmer of energy discharge blurring around them. The out-city command headquarters, with any luck. It correlated with their heading, despite looking much like a dozen smaller Xenos structures dotted around Gelbrin's outskirts. The magnitude of the journey ahead through enemy territory was daunting, even to one of the Eighth Company. They had lost too many Battle Brothers already, but Captain Atheus had made his feelings more than clear. Only by killing the red-suited Xenos warlord and bringing back his head could they make amends for their earlier mistakes.
"I note we're still more than 100 miles from our destination," said Ketoros dully. "We've refueled, haven't we?" replied Numitor, a shade too fast. "Why, are you tiring?" "Tiring of unnecessary risks, perhaps. We're out on a limb here, with no armored support or air cover to back us up. We've lost Austos, Dalaton, and Endrion. Good men, all. Warriors I fought with, trained with."
He paused, head bowed.
"Considered friends for over 12 years. As for your squad, halved in the space of a day."
Ketoros swept an arm back at the Ultramarines emerging from the complex behind.
"Antellions? Shattered by that cursed artillery machine in the jungle. Until we can get our machine spirits exorcised and our vox restored, the chances of their gene seed being recovered are slim to none. Face it, Numitor, they are lost to us, and likely lost to the chapter."
Numitor said nothing, silenced by the brutal honesty of Ketoros's summation.
"Such is the nature of war," said Sicarius, his tone sepulchral. "Such is the fate of all of us, sooner or later."
Distant explosions thumped way back in the heart of the city. There was a faint scream of tortured metal on the edge of hearing, the last protestation of a collapsing building. Gelbrin was taking a hammering from Imperial and Tau alike. Numitor's great pauldron-clad shoulders slumped. Ketoros had a point. The idea of fighting in a purely reactive fashion still made him cringe, but it galled him to think of the lives he had lost in so short a space of time. Other companies, other chapters were still back there, fighting to the death, while squads Numitor and Sicarius got further and further away from the front.
And what have we gained in exchange for these grievous losses, Sergeant?
Continued Ketoros.
A few dozen miles made towards an uncertain objective, a few gallons of Xenos-tainted promethium.
We have knowledge, said Velatan.
Priceless, if put to good use, said Duolor.
But they have knowledge of us in return, countered Ketoros. Far more detailed and comprehensive than ours, if that was truly a war-tech facility. Technical data likely to be broadcast across the entire Tau Empire.
A distinct possibility, muttered Magros. And with the Hammers of Dawn employing the same maneuvers they always use, they'll be learning our tactics fast.
Those warsuits we fought in the jungle, said Aortus, the big ones, they weren't detailed in the Vox brief, but we took them down nonetheless. There's every chance we figured out how to beat their cutting-edge war machines, their secret weapons, before they were even sanctioned for deployment.
What if they aren't deployed at all? If they were just prototypes, said Ketoros. The Tau are cunning. They're no hammers. They won't play the same trick twice. If they practice puppet wars even against their allies, Emperor only knows how much veritas they hold on their foes.
A good idea to head for their command post, then, said Glavius. We'd be wasted in a block-by-block war of attrition anyway. Leave that sort of warfare to the Astra Militarum. We take out their high command, and all their precious knowledge isn't nearly so useful.
My thanks, Glavius, said Numitor. That was my reasoning.
Let us make a start, then, said Colnid,
tightening the bolter straps that held his prosthetic leg in place.
The Xenos war leaders won't remain wrong-footed for long.
Denturis gave a snort, glancing at his squadmate's prosthesis. Colnid bared his teeth in a smile that was as much threat as it was camaraderie.
Aye, said Numitor. You are right, Colnid.
He turned to see the rest of their composite group gathered around him, several of Sicarius' squad standing with the tips of their boots over the ledge. The sheer drop below would have been dizzying to lesser warriors. With their jump packs replenished, the assault marines could make a controlled descent just fine, but there was no way that Antellion's squad could make it.
Sergeant Antellion, I know we must part here. Thanks to that Xenos ghost machine, we will have to send a flak missile up as a signal the next time an Imperial gunship squadron passes close by. With luck, they will retrieve us.
Antellion slung his bolter, motioning to his heavy weapons trooper to cover the skies.
Yours is a worthy cause, Sergeant Numitor. I shall put in a good word for you to Captain Atheus. Assuming our request for transport is granted, we shall rejoin you as soon as possible.
He came to stand on the cliff's edge, standing bolt upright in front of Numitor and making the sign of the Aquila.
Until then, Emperor be with you, Joras Numitor. And with you, Sergeant. Farewell.
Nearby, Sicarius blasted from the edge of the drop without a word, his squad close behind. Diplomatic as ever, thought Numitor. The backwash of heat buffeted Numitor and Antellion, but the sergeants held their ground, watching the assault squad descend. Its passage was marked by a twin trail of foul-smelling smoke from Magros's flamer-fueled jump pack, easy enough to follow.
Never mind, Sicarius, said Numitor. He more than makes up for it with raw talent.
That is one way of looking at it, said Antellion.
Onward, then, said Numitor, turning to his squad. Same heading. We have work to do, and I'm damned if I will let Sicarius get there first.
The Dol Ithan gas cloud bathed the ruins of Gelbrin City in wan blue light. It swirled and sparkled in the night sky, beauty incarnate to a poet, and a source of boundless energy to a pioneer. To the hunters of the Ultramarines' 10th Company, it was a nuisance that could get them all killed. 5 strong-limbed scouts swung from handhold to handhold under the elegant arch of a transmotive sweep, huffs of exertion the only noise as they slowly made their way over the shattered warscape below. 6.5 miles they had come from the drop site, all without touching the ground. To make their way across open terrain would mean being spotted by a patrol drone, or worse, a pilot car squadron on the prowl. Death would follow soon after, merciless and sudden. 3 nights they had searched. Whenever the low purr of engines or the flicker of a multispectral scanner alerted them to an airborne Tau patrol, they had hung still, muscles burning to the point of numbness, and waited for the danger to pass. Camellia-line fatigues blurred their outlines, baffling the visual spectrum, and the machine spirits of their war gear were rendered dormant so as not to betray their presence to enemy auspexes. The scouts, in turn, had scanned the rubble for the blue armor of their fallen brothers. They had found no few corpses, and they had marked every one for later recovery by the chapter's apothecaries. Thus far, none of them had been the cadaver they searched for, the find that would allow them to turn back for the drop site, exhausted but successful. Until now. With a curled fist and a jabbing finger, Scout Sergeant Thridius ordered his brothers to move hand over hand to the shadowed wedge where the transmotive sweep met the ground. He moved out, dropping the last 5 meters to land on the wreckage of a dropship with a muffled crunch. There, slumped against the curving cliff of a Xenos building, were the remains of Captain Atheus. He had been slain by a weapon of such galling power it had bored right through his chest, down through his guts, and out the base of his spine to chew a deep hole into the wall beyond. Thridius nodded as his suspicions were confirmed. Whatever had killed the captain of the Eighth had been taller by far and armed with cutting-edge Xenos weaponry. Atheus's face was waxen and pale under the light of the gas cloud. Twin trails of dried blood lined his chin, its deep red appearing black. The captain's face bore a look of consternation and pride, his jaw set and his brow furrowed, even in death. And there was the axe of the Lord Executioner, lying discarded as if it were no more than a common blade. Checking the skies for Tau patrols, the lead scout pulled his camellia-line cloak from his waist and tucked it around his shoulders. He scooped a handful of rock dust from the lee of a shattered slab, patted it onto his face, and rubbed it into his hair. Behind him, his squad followed suit. As Space Marines, it was always galling to cover their heraldic colours, but the Tau patrols would no doubt have calibrated their sensors to spot them. There were times when the 10th Company was called upon to fulfil missions the rest of the chapter would struggle to achieve. Thridius motioned for his men to stay and cover him, beckoning Overius to accompany him with a point and a curled finger. The two scouts padded forward in a crouch, moving from the toppled wall of a building to the burnt-out hulk of a Tau transport. A quick shuffling run, and they were over to Atheus's body. Thridius picked up the cadaver by the arm, crouched, and with a great heave, turned it over his back so the immense dead weight was borne upon his spine. Overius retrieved the great axe, and together they padded back the way they came. Along the way, Thridius saw that the disembodied hand of Captain Atheus still grasped the ancient weapon's haft, locked tight by death's own grip. Stubborn, even in death. Just as the two scouts were halfway across open ground, they heard the sound of a Tau drone, soft but getting louder. Thridius darted a glare at Overius, eyes wide, and they both froze. The drone came closer. The hum of its engines was not that of the usual blasphemous gun machine, but the bass thrum of a far larger reconnaissance type. Thridius saw it round the corner, a heavy disc with a wide column of scanners, ammunition slots, and gun workings hanging from its midsection. The device would scry them in seconds, and before a minute had passed, they would be taking heavy fire. There was a dull pop as Brother Leovitus took his shot, the tiny flicker of his sniper rifle's muzzle just visible in Thridius's peripheral vision. The shot struck home where the underside of the drone's disc met its midsection, and the machine was suddenly swathed with purple electricity. It emitted a strange screech, veering to one side before its scryolites and beams shorted out and turned black. Its anti-grav engines went next. The drone crashed into the rubble, thin streams of smoke hissing from its fuselage. Thridius turned to Leovitus and nodded curtly before hauling Atheus's body back into the shelter of the transmotive sweep. Crouching, his brothers helped take the weight.
Nice shot, Leovitus, whispered the sergeant. My thanks, but they will soon notice it's gone. We must make haste. Donturos, inform Lord Khalgar that the captain's body has been retrieved, and the axe with it. Then observe silence protocols until we are safely back.
A nod of confirmation, a rustle of camelioline, and the scouts of the 10th Company melted away into the shadows once more.